this is a new live show. I'm experimenting with trying these live shows, and I'm trying to give you guys a glimpse of kind of how I think through some of the news to help you kind of look at things from different angles. And so that's kind of the whole point of this channel, is to help people take a deeper kind of quantitative and qualitative look at things, to not just accept kind of like the shallow interpretation, but actually to go a couple steps deeper and to look at the core and the essence of things. And I think that's going to help us not just with investing, with all areas of our life. All right, if you're on the live stream, if you can please give me a thumbs up if you could hear this audio well. All right, so today we've got some exciting news. I'm going to cover kind of the top maybe two or three or four news items today, and then I'm going to open it up for questions and see what you guys want to talk about. All right, so the first news item today is about Mercedes and BMW and VW. And so here's this German newspaper. They come up with an article that says this is no longer a laugh. And this is an interesting story because basically Daimler, which is, you know, the company that of Mercedes, is talking to BMW and to VW and BMW separately. And they're trying to establish some type of common operating system, they're calling it. And basically, they're trying to share software expertise, right? And they're trying to catch Tesla because Tesla is like already pushing the lead. So here's how, here's what the article says. It says they had a very top secret meeting with Daimler and VW, and then they had top secret meeting with BMW or Daimler and BMW. And these meetings weren't supposed to get out at all. And they were at the highest management level, top secret. Basically, they're the CEOs of these companies, probably, right? And they were discussing whether the two groups could program an operating system for automobiles together, because the software is crucial for the cars of the future. And at the moment, Tesla is miles away from the Germans, right? So they're kind of getting desperate here, and they're wanting to try to pool their software expertise. And they're saying because software development is tedious, small scale, takes a lot of time and requires a lot of programmers, both of these are far too low for German automakers. It would be logical to cooperate, right? So that was kind of like the discussion of these high level CEO meetings between Daimler, VW, and also BMW. Now, Volkswagen, this article goes on, says it's in a difficult situation. Yeah, they're intending to deliver the ID.3 this summer, which is their new kind of flagship electric vehicle. It's supposed to be a competitor to the Model 3, and they're trying to put 100,000 of these vehicles by the end of the year. However, one of the people from this working group is saying that this car is far from ready for the market. So it's basically not very good car right now. They have a lot of work to do. And this VW has a lot riding on this car, because if it's successful, then, you know, VW CEO can justify his big push for electric vehicles. But if it's not successful, then, you know, his CEO position could be up for grabs. And so this is existential for the VW CEO. And then secondly, it says that VW needs the ID.3 to comply with the EU carbon requirements. And we already know that Fiat inked a deal with Tesla, basically about $2 billion over a course of probably 2 years, maybe three. And VW doesn't want to ink a deal because they think they can produce their own electric cars. And so they need 100,000 by the end of the year to avoid fines. But what are the chances really that VW can produce, right, 100,000 of these ID.3 vehicles by the end of the year? It's kind of slim. And so the article goes on and says, well, one of the problems is battery cells, right? And they're saying that the cells of the South Korean manufacturer LG Chem are currently scarce, right? There's just not enough of these cells. And some of them prefer to put in the Taycan, right, rather than the ID.3. And then it goes on to say that these ID.3 vehicles are currently being pre-produced as empty sheet metal casings and temporarily stored in a huge parking lot in Saxony, with the intention of importing the software when at least one reasonable, suitable basic version is ready. Okay, now a few notes on this. First, this is a German newspaper, right? So they're close to the action. But the article I'm quoting to right now is a translated version, right? It's a Google translated version. But they're basically saying they're making these shells, right? They don't have the powertrains. In other words, they don't have the battery pack or the motors or anything. And they don't even have the software, right, in the car. They're basically the sheet metal, right? Tin cans. That's what this article says. tin cans without the inner life, right? And this is the state of VW right now. And it goes on and it says that the Germans don't want to like become just a software or a supplier to the software makers like, let's say, Google or Apple. And they really want to make their own software. It's just that they're so poor and so behind in all of this. And then, in one of the other articles in this, one of the quotes in this article is saying that they basically have to handcraft these first ID3s, right, until the end of the year. They're just not ready. And that's the state of VW right now. They're scrambling. They don't know what to do. Tesla's way ahead. And I want to take a look at this actually from a couple angles. First is it's actually good that, you know, Daimler and VW and BMW, et cetera, are scrambling. But I think they're misunderstanding the problem. And the problem is, it reminds me of the whole Apple and iPhone situation. And back in the day, Nokia and BlackBerry and Motorola, et cetera, they thought the problem is they needed to improve their software a bit and make better handsets to compete with the iPhone. However, what Apple did was they completely leapfrogged all of the handset makers by creating a complex desktop class operating system, right? That was far beyond anything else out there, like miles ahead. And these handset makers had no chance to actually compete and to reach Apple, because Apple was one of the best software makers in the world. In a similar way, Tesla has become one of the best software makers in terms of just operating systems, right, for auto, but also look at the whole, you know, autopilot and autonomous driving systems they're making. This is a completely software focused, right, approach that Tesla's taking, and they're becoming one of the best in the world, competing with, you know, they can compete head to head with some of the best companies in the world. And so this problem that the German automakers have and other automakers have is not simply they need to improve their software a bit, right, by 10 or 20 or 50%. They need to completely remake their company and become software companies. But how does like a manufacturing company with steeped in bureaucracy and doesn't really have any software expertise much at all, how does that type of company gain the chops and the expertise to compete with the Apples, the Googles, right? All of the top software companies in the world, including Tesla? That's what it's going to take for these German automakers to, you know, make it as not just automakers, but in the future world of autonomous driving. And so the reality and the possibility that these OEM automakers are actually going to succeed, right, in a hyper-competitive, right, software-driven auto field is really minuscule, in my opinion. And that's why I've been calling this thing a slow motion train wreck, right? Back since 2013 or so, 2014, I was writing a lot on TeslaMotorsClub.com, and I penned a few articles. I'm like, yeah, this does not look good, right? These automakers are not going to be able to adapt. They're not going to be able to change and become software companies. And this is a slow motion train wreck. It's just going to take time, but it's a matter of time before all these automakers get increasingly desperate, increasingly realizing that they just don't have what it takes and their options are going to be limited. Now, what's tricky about this is a lot of the people with the software chops, they don't want to get into making cars, because with cars, it's just a very messy business, right? You have cars that have thousands and thousands of parts, right? And it's just extremely complex. And also there's a liability question. It's like, who wants to make a car in this current world when these governments hold you liable as an automaker for accidents and reliability issues, like years and years, like 5 or 10 years, right, post-manufacture, you're still on the hook for certain liability issues, right? And the amount of kind of lawsuits and liability that continues on as an automaker is just immense. So no one in their right mind, in terms of companies out there, really wants to get into the auto field unless there are huge margins, right? And if there are huge margins, then that might tempt, right, the software companies to get in. But barring that, right, it's going to be a tough thing for software companies to really want to get into the auto field. All right, so that's the first news today. The second news today was that Tesla inked a deal with Hanwha, which is a South Korean company, for battery formation equipment in the US. All right, what does this mean? So battery formation is the process of initial charging and discharging of battery cells, right? It's part of the final phase of the battery. And the process demands a high voltage and precise output current to ensure the battery cells will last for the indicated lifetime. And Hanwha is giving, right, this battery formation equipment to a Fremont factory, then to Nevada, Germany, and China. So this is quite interesting because it shows a few things. First, Tesla is getting into, I think, the battery cell production field, right? They're going to be making their own battery cells. We're just getting more and more confirmation of this. And second, it gives some hints that the battery cell production is actually going to happen in every gigafactory out there. So it's going to happen in Fremont, Nevada, Germany, and China. So we're going to have each gigafactory, I think, also make their own cells. That's my hypothesis. And we'll learn more about that at Battery Day, hopefully in May. Now, in addition to battery charging and discharging equipment, Hanwha also produces equipment needed for assembly of battery cells, such as notching, stacking, tab welding, and pouch forming machines. Now, this is also interesting because Tesla is in need of, right, a ton of battery cell production equipment, and Hanwha can be one of the companies that provide that type of equipment. All right, so the third item I want to talk about today is how to stay rational in a world of FUD and hype. And this was a tweet that someone tweeted at me yesterday, and it says, "Hey Dave, as part of the Tesla universe of investors, what is your thinking about making sure you're staying rational and not buying hype or buying FUD, which is just the other side of the coin?" All right, so I want to actually commend Origamic Cyber here for a great question. I actually do think FUD and hype is very, very similar, right? And I think a lot of people, they think that, oh, if you're just on the right side, then it's all great. But in my opinion, it's more of an issue of loose thinking, right? And I've talked a lot about this in my channel, is one of the enemies, I think, of investing in, and becoming a great investor for that sake, is to attack and to not, I guess, settle for loose thinking. And it's to have kind of accurate thinking and clear thinking on as many subjects as you can across a broad array of areas. Now, the problem with hype or FUD is people are letting their emotions get a big part of it. They're letting their emotional and wishful thinking, right, enter their decision-making process, and they're letting their biases, right, get into the situation. This is one of the reasons why I've been kind of been critical of some of these pie in the sky price targets, right? Tesla, 15,000 or something, right? In a few years. I just think like all of that is like part of the hype, and it's similar to me as part of the FUD. Like Tesla's going to go bankrupt, right? People are letting their biases and emotions, I think, getting into the decision-making process when it needs to be clear. So here's my answer I gave on Twitter here. It says, for me, it's all about the superiority of the product, right? And the company's ability to defend that superiority over time. If that deteriorates over time, I'm out. I focus on that while others believe the FUD and the hype. FUD stands for fear, uncertainty, doubt, right? So here's what I'm saying is in my opinion, in the long-term picture, the success of a company is largely dependent on how superior their product or service is compared to, right, the other options on the market. Now, if the company has a far superior product, and of course it has to come in at a reasonable price, right, meaning for the price, if it's a far superior product, then the company has a chance, right, of growing demand, which grows revenue, grows margin, they cover their expenses, and they're left with profit. And with that growing demand, they're able to grow profits over time and grows a company. Now, without a far superior product, the company has an uphill battle to grow it because other competitors are basically at their heels trying to gain market share together. So now you're in a hyper-competitive marketplace without a distinct winner. And so that's kind of the market I want to stay away from. I want to stay away from a market where there's just a bunch of people, four or five people, companies that seem very similar, have some decent products, but they don't have any differentiation. There's not a single company that's completely way ahead and out in the pack. And so what I look for in Tesla is I don't look to follow people's price targets, right? Those price targets to me is like irrelevant. I don't care if someone says, oh, Tesla's going to 10,000 next year, if Tesla's going to zero next year. It means like zero to me. In my opinion, the core and the key essence, right, of investing, let's say, in hypergrowth or in potential 10x generation company like Tesla is to focus in on the superiority of the product. How good is the Model 3? How good is the Model Y compared to its competitors? And is Tesla able to increase that superiority, right, of their product over other products in that category? If they're able to do that, now Tesla is in the driver's seat, right, or whatever company you're analyzing, and they're going to have a great chance at becoming like a great growth company and increasing your return on capital. Now, a lot of times there's mistakes that people make, and the mistake people make in most cases, I think, is believing that a company's like past growth is going to lead to their future growth, right? So you look at the company's past growth. Let's take an example, like GoPro grew so much in the past, whatever, 5 years, and you don't look at the core essence of the product, which is how good is that product compared to other products, right? I think that will save a lot of people, actually, a lot of harm just following that. Now, someone else tweeted me this graph here. And actually, it's kind of hard to see, but these red stars are the places that Elon commented the stock price was too high. But in my opinion, it wasn't really in the past. Elon Musk was more saying that the stock price was like higher than Tesla has, that we deserve, right? So it was more kind of like not a complete right knock on the stock price. It was more of aspirational, we'll get there someday. But these are the places that Elon basically said, the stock price was a bit high. And if you notice, actually, there was actually this big drop the first couple times, right? And I was very, very aware of this big drop, actually. I mean, it was a painful drop. And a lot of people right now are discounting, right, Elon's comments and saying, oh, who cares? The market rebounded today. Look at it, you know, it's back up to its numbers. And it's true, Tesla could rebound and go much higher. But looking at history, if you go back to the end of 2013, talk to investors back in that period and the impact that Elon's comments had, it was pretty, shattering in a lot of ways. I know some people kind of ridicule people who are critical of Elon's tweets, but there's a history. There's actually more than meets the eye in some ways. Also, he did another comment, the stock price went down, and another comment, the stock price, you know, kept at that level, eventually went down, and now you have Elon Musk's stock price now. Now, there's a lot of things going on. First is, I don't think perhaps Elon has the same amount of influence over the stock price as in the past, because in the past, it was purely based upon like speculation that Model 3 would go to full production and be a great product. Now it's come to realization. And so there's a lot of product and revenue, right, proof that Tesla is a solid company. So it's not completely based on just promises. And I think that's why you see Elon's words, let's say the stock price is too high, has a more limited impact than it did, let's say, several years ago. All right. That's why today Tesla, you know, went back up to 761. And that's almost the exact time, I think it was 760, that Elon Musk tweeted the stock price was too high last Friday. And now it closed back up to 760. We'll see what happens. All right, Martin McDonald, this was actually from my live feed last week, said, Dave, what's your thoughts on the governance of Tesla? Elon's relationship with the board, is the board being effective? Now, I've got a few different thoughts on this. First is, overall, I think Tesla and Elon, they're in a unique situation, right? It's not a lot, there's not a lot of companies that have a CEO as eccentric as Elon, but also as ambitious as Elon. And I think that's what distinguishes Elon Musk from many other CEOs, is his ambition is like an order of magnitude, or even two orders of magnitude higher than almost any other CEO out there, right? And the best example I can compare it to is like maybe like Steve Jobs, right? Steve Jobs was able to catch something big. Zuckerberg has a lot of ambition, you know? I don't know what's his next thing. I mean, early on in Facebook, for him to go from there to where he's at right now, it took a lot of ambition. There's just certain CEOs that have like 100x ambition compared to other CEOs. And Elon Musk is one of those. And to be a board member for a CEO like that, it's got to be very difficult, because that CEO thinks completely outside of the box. And in order to really have 100x ambitions, you've got to be able to take certain risks that are abnormal for normal people, meaning normal people are not going to do a 100x ambitious plan because it's just too risky, right? But for the 100x ambitious entrepreneur or CEO, they don't mind their risk, right? They're willing to, you know, burn the ship if they need to, if it gives them a great chance, right, at achieving their worthwhile, let's say, generational goals. And in that sense, you know, I think the best way forward for Tesla really is to do what they're currently doing, is to be supportive of Elon Musk in this whole mission, and to kind of shield him from criticism and to do what a board needs to do. But there needs to be a realization that the board is not going to have like control over the CEO like certain other companies, right? Tesla is not going to be able to be run like a board-driven company like many other companies are. It's a CEO-driven company, and that's where a lot of the value and the innovation comes from. And the reality is we're going to see things like this happen. We're going to see things like Elon tweet certain things, Elon, you know, say certain things, do certain things that are controversial, that are taking big risks. Sometimes it's going to be a mistake. Sometimes it's going to fail. But in the bigger picture, the chances are, right, the big win, the big plays work out. And that's the bet that investors are betting on right now. All right, this is the last question before I go ahead and open it up for some viewer questions. If you have a question you want to talk about here, go ahead and in the live chat comments right now, in caps, all caps, put question colon and then write out your question, okay? Because there are a lot of people just writing comments as well, so it's kind of hard to catch what questions are actually questions. So go ahead, all caps, question colon, and then write your question. That'll help me to go ahead and kind of pick out the questions quicker. All right, can Fremont factory open now that California is going into stage two? All right, so news just came out just like, you know, just an hour or so ago, that Governor Newsom from California is trying to push California into stage two of opening. So it includes some retail and hospitality businesses, clothing, florists, bookshops, sporting goods, curbside pickup, etc. There are some articles saying that it could include actually manufacturing as well. And so now there's some speculation that, hey, can Tesla open up manufacturing, open up the Fremont factory now that the California governor has said that we're going to go into stage two? So here the article from the Mercury News. It says, in the 7-county Bay Area, however, the region's stricter order, it's been extended until the end of May. So, and the government, Governor Newsom basically said, they have stricter guidelines, and so we're not preempting those guidelines. We still will allow them to move forward. So, in short, the governor of California is allowing the local county orders to take precedent over the state orders. And that actually makes sense in some ways, because a lot of times the health issues that supposedly this pandemic goes under more county restrictions. And so Governor Newsom is saying we're just going to leave it like that. The Alameda County, which is where Fremont factory is located, they have one of the strictest orders out there with the Bay Area, and they're going to be allowed to continue the shelter in place. So as of now, the Fremont factory is not opening. So don't believe the hype. You know, if people are hyping, saying, hey, Fremont factory is opening this week now because of the California order, right now, unless the Bay Area changes their shelter in place order, Fremont is not opening. And so that's just something to take into consideration. Now, one sliver of hope is there's a Bay Area public official saying that we are monitoring, and the order in the Bay Area could be revised before May 31st, 2020. In other words, there's a possibility the Bay Area can revise their shelter in order place and allow Tesla to open up the Fremont factory, right? And that is kind of the hope for Tesla. All right, so let's go ahead and take some questions here. So the first question is from Vishish Patel. Says, why do you think the German auto is avoiding companies like Google or Apple to provide software for their cars? I envision a future where car software is split like cell phones. Yeah, the big problem that these automakers have with the big software companies is they don't trust them, right? They think that once, right, they allow Google or Apple or Nvidia to come in and take over, right, the software of the car, then Apple and Google will have immense leverage over them, and then auto manufacturers to become a low margin, just kind of, you know, sheet metal, right, producer of just goods, and that's basically the end of automakers. That's pretty much across the board, all automaker CEOs, except for maybe Chrysler, right? They're probably the most open towards software. But they're very, very skeptical of, right, these big companies taking over their software in the car and taking all the margins that that software provides, right? And it's kind of like, it's no longer like a secret. Like, whoever owns the software in the car owns the attention, right, of people in the car, or at least can monetize that attention. And that attention in the car is immense, right? And so all these automakers, they're not, they're suspicious of big tech, and they're wanting to develop their own tech. And that's why, like, for example, you have GM who bought into Ford, and then a lot of these other OEMs are now investing into Cruise, or actually not GM bought Ford, sorry, GM bought Cruise, and now all these auto OEMs are investing into Cruise, right? They're all trying to, you know, get their own software platform, but nothing is working out for these companies. They just currently don't have the software chops. They're caught in like this catch-22 scenario. Nitish Mehta, thoughts of Mizuno, new board member. I'm trying to learn more about him, but can't find anything about his history. Yeah, so Mizuno is the new board member. He was in charge of the largest, fund in Japan. It's a pension fund. And he's been invited onto the board. A lot of times this stuff, these things happen, in my opinion, where Elon will meet, right, someone, right, in his dealings, and someone will impress him, and they'll talk, form a relationship, and then Elon will recommend this person to the board. It could happen by through other ways, but I think, Elon felt like this person was someone that could be supportive of the mission and can bring some, you know, expertise to the thing. I don't know much other than that. All right, Alexander says, Dave, what other stocks, I'm guessing besides Tesla, do you own? Yeah, in this past downturn, when the stock market crashed, I picked up a bunch of different, I started nibbling into a lot of different stocks that I've been watching over time, and I established some kind of exploratory positions on companies that I think might have potential to do some good stuff, good gains, and I'm going to go ahead and do some more videos on that. If just off the cuff, I think Google is a great option if you don't want a 10x, meaning if you don't want the high risk of a 10x kind of company. Google with YouTube and Android and search, I think they've got a great foundation going forward. In terms of timing though, right, when to get into a company like Google, that's another question, right? I was able to get in, to get some shares, right, at like 1100 or so. We'll see, like, you know, I'm kind of, you know, I have mixed reservations about where the stock market goes. I think a lot of the big companies, like even like Apple at the right price, if it goes down, is interesting. And even like Facebook at the right price. A lot of these big companies are, I think, stronger than people realize. They're across many different countries and languages, and they have many different products. They're basically these conglomerates, right? Modern day digital conglomerates. And if we have a case where, the value of money goes down, let's say because of Fed printing, you want to, you know, gravitate to the companies that I think do have the best position going forward. Now, personally, in my kind of investing philosophy, I'm not a huge proponent of kind of like more of these safer growth stock or safer low growth stocks like a Google or like a Facebook or Amazon or Apple, even though I'm starting to build, you know, I've basically bought stock in all these companies, right, when it went down. But my bigger emphasis is what companies can completely outsize, right, outdo the gains of other companies. I can do a 10x, right, in 5 or 10 years. And one of the current companies I'm looking into deeply right now is Square. I think they have a great potential, and I'll probably do some more videos on Square and some other companies as well. All right, let's look at let's do some other questions. Question, what are the odds of Elon getting in trouble with SEC? Yeah, you know, I think a lot of times the bulls tend to underestimate what's going on, and they think that, oh, Elon's not going to get in trouble, but then Elon gets in trouble, right? And I think there is risk because there's a lot of shorts out there that are very, very motivated to get Elon into trouble. And a lot of times this stuff is not very complicated. All these shorts band together, send like hundreds and hundreds of letters and emails and all this stuff to the SEC, and they get involved through lawyers or whatever, and SEC has all this pressure now to try to appease this mob, right? And it's kind of like mob politics in a way, right? This mob comes together and tries to, you know, create a crisis. And so on this flip side, on the bull side, right, these bulls don't understand, a lot of times, I'm not talking about all bulls, but a lot of bulls, they don't understand actually that these shorts are actually very serious, right? And a lot of them have major issues. Yeah, it's like weird. Some of these shorts have like vitriol, like it's very, very deep hatred toward Elon and Tesla, and they'll do almost anything, right, to harm the company. And that's a real risk, right? People need to understand that this stuff is real, right? And if you looked at the previous SEC kind of whole fiasco, that was a real risk for Tesla. I think people could have underestimated, minimized the whole thing, but yeah, that's a serious risk. And I think going forward, I think this time around, Elon's comments were kind of cryptic. It didn't have to deal with anything material with the stock, with the company, like projections or guidance, etc. It was more of a personal opinion on the stock price, and I think Elon will get away with it because it's not necessarily like something that I think he needed board approval. So my hunch is he'll get away with it, but I think people need to be aware that in some ways Elon does need to tread, I think, carefully when it deals with his SEC settlement, right? With things material, with things guidance, related to guidance, he needs to be careful with tweeting. This is something that is a risk going forward. All right, Sang Yup Lee says, question, what would be the impact of TSLA Tesla with China-US trade war? Yeah, so, you know, some of the stuff with the China-US trade war is actually a risk. You think that you could kind of like minimize it, say, oh, it's not going to happen, Tesla will be exempt. But the reality is that if you look at a longer kind of term, the America First kind of, you know, movement that's taking place, and it's not just America First, it's actually a lot of countries are taking this kind of more of an ultra-nationalistic kind of approach to politics. So I'm not just talking about America. It's a global phenomenon. And actually, you know, a lot of times Eastern Europe and some other European countries were actually moving more toward this nationalistic agenda before the U.S. actually, right? U.S. was actually more of a late bloomer in that respect. But with that said, yeah, we could be looking into more regionalism, right, with more of Asia, Europe, and, you know, maybe U.S. and Europe, etc. And in that case, like, lots of things can happen. And if you look at it more out of a 5 or 10 year trajectory, that's how I think you have to look at it, right? These relationships with countries don't deteriorate just in a matter of months. A lot of times it's like a matter of years and years and dozens of episodes, right? And a lot of times when it finally erupts, right, people are like, oh my gosh, it erupted. But no, there's actually like a dozen years of major escalations, right? An example is with Iran. You kill one of their top generals, right? One of their key leaders in the company, and people are like, oh, right, it's all over, it's gone. We have no repercussions, no consequences to that action. But people don't understand this stuff with country on country level, it happens in slow motion, right? Over 5 or 10 years, over many, many episodes, the tensions escalate. And so anyways, with China-US trade war, I don't want to minimize that at all. I think Tesla, though, does have some advantages. And one of the advantages is they're becoming kind of a homegrown type of domestic kind of Tesla or Chinese company. Not completely, obviously, right? They're still a foreign company, but they have their own headquarters, they have their own national staff, their brand is looking like a Chinese brand more, and the Chinese government is kind of adopting Tesla, right, kind of as one of their own, giving them incentives, etc. And so I think in the bigger picture, there's not a huge amount to be concerned about right now at this moment in terms of the U.S. trade war. Just like with Apple, I think Apple, there's not a huge amount. But if things deteriorate over the next 5 or 10 years, that could be a concern, right? Tesla might need to make some tough decisions. But at right now, there are many more companies I'd be more concerned about actually than Tesla regarding the U.S. China trade war. All right, question, are the data collection from other companies a credible threat to full self-driving market share? Yeah, data collection, I'm not sure which other companies you're talking about. I mean, we have maybe Waymo out there, a few other companies, but they're not really doing mass data collection like Tesla. Tesla's like the only one that's really doing it at scale right now. Others are basically just doing it at low scale. Everyone else is talking. I think, in my opinion, it's going to take some company to make a huge bet to say, hey, we're getting cameras installed on like all of our cars or something, right? And to really take a bold bet and to get data, right? And until then, Tesla's just going to extend their lead. All right, do you think in time the struggle of converting software EV car companies will make big auto start to combine to be able to compete or just go out of business? Yeah, I think actually it makes sense actually for them to start to combine. Like, you know, hey, get Daimler, BMW, and VW all together into a new structure, a new company that's more lean, right? Or something, right? Or at least get them to start a new division, right? A new electric car autonomous driving division that at least has a chance, right? I don't know what's going to really be able to survive in their bureaucratic, like suffocating environment. All right, stocks for life. What are your thoughts about Robinhood investors buying? Yeah, I tweeted this thing about Robinhood investors, right? Their number two most popular stock is Ford right now, and then it's like General Electric and Disney. Some people are saying like Robinhood gives two free stocks or something, is it, right? And one of them, to a lot of people, is Ford. But my question is like, it's like 800,000 people or so own Ford stock in Robinhood. Is Robinhood really buying like $10 million worth of shares of Ford and giving it to people? I don't know if that's really the case. So I don't know. It seems like people, yeah, in Robinhood, they seem to follow, I don't know, you know, there seem to be people who are looking for bargains, right? And I question that whole approach just because in the longer term picture, you're going to have the ones that have the superior product. Those are going to be the big winners because they're the ones who are able to drive demand and able to drive revenue, which drives profit. All right, Martin B says, which genomic companies are you studying right now? Yeah, you know, I started to do a deep dive like a month ago into these genomic companies. I just went through the top kind of, you know, I went through, yeah, the top kind of gene editing companies like the Illumina's for the equipment and Invitae's for the, you know, the platforms. I went into CRISPR technologies. I started to go read through all their annual reports. I started to listen to all their CEO interviews, everything I could find on online. And then I kind of got stuck because I couldn't find a standout winner, right? I couldn't find the company with the far superior product and with the truly ambitious CEO that really has clear thinking and strategy. If you have some insight in this area, I'd love to hear from you guys, right? Give me some input in the comment section. All right, Socks for Life, do you own Square? Yes, I do own some Square. Actually, I own a bunch of, maybe like I own like 20 more stocks right now just in the past month that I didn't own before. Even though they're small but growing positions. All right, question. What are your thoughts about the pros and cons of a potential virtual investor day? Yeah, you know, I actually don't mind it. You know, like Warren Buffett did his virtual Berkshire Hathaway meeting and it was fine, right? I thought it was fine. He's just like, it's kind of like a YouTube kind of thing, right? He just kind of rambled and people asked questions. Yeah, I think Elon would do a great job virtually. It doesn't matter if it's physical, in my opinion, but we'll see. Oligopi says, question, what do you think of NVIDIA's position in the self-driving hardware market? Yeah, NVIDIA, you know, they're an executor, right? They know what to do. They know AI, they know the hardware side. I'm not gonna bet against NVIDIA and their CEO. I've watched enough of his interviews to know that the guy is a smart guy. And the autonomous driving field is a big field, right? It's not just Tesla. There's gonna be a second and third place. So NVIDIA does have probably some future ahead for them based off of that. All right, Audrey says, Volkswagen, the automaker, is the most prepared for the future apart from Tesla. I don't know. I mean, yeah, some people say that just because VW has been, you know, saying a lot of stuff and has been releasing a lot of like prototypes of, you know, ambitious plans to manufacture EVs. But it's one thing to say it, but it's another thing to actually compete against Tesla, right? Release your EV and see how many EVs it sells against the Model 3 and Model Y, right? And then we'll start talking if VW really has the best chance. I just not seeing it, man. I wish they could surprise me, right? What do you think about Intel's ambition for autonomous driving, considering they bought today Israeli startup MOVEit? Intel has great ambitions. I'm telling you, so many of these big companies have great ambitions for autonomous driving. I mean, they bought Mobileye, right, a few years back. And so Mobileye was basically, right, neck to neck with Tesla at that time. Now Tesla, I think, has moved far ahead. But yeah, Intel has great ambitions. The problem, in my opinion, is like no one has the complete strategy, right? Elon is the only one at this moment who's completed the whole package, hardware and software and the car and the whole updates and just, you know, the cameras and everything, and the right strategy, right, camera-based, and I think Elon is the only one doing it. And until we see people, I think, coming up with a comparable complete system, it's going to be an uphill battle for people like Intel, etc. All right, guys, I'm going to go ahead, and I wish I could actually do this for quite longer, but my battery is right at 1%, so I'm going to close down this feed before my computer completely shuts off and I lose this feed altogether. But anyways, I wanted to thank you guys for joining this live show. I'm experimenting kind of, you know, with kind of this format of talking about the latest news, taking some questions. And I think my whole purpose in this is I want to kind of share a thought process, kind of a discipline and a habit of thinking things through from different angles, going a bit deeper, not just reacting emotionally. And this is something I think is actually a learned habit and a learned process, and it helps investors, and I've learned this over time, to keep calm, to keep objective, and to wait for those great opportunities, right? And to be collected enough to know how to seize the big opportunities when they come. So anyways, I hope this has been helpful. Please go ahead, if you haven't already, subscribe to my channel, turn on notifications. And if you want to help the channel, go ahead, hit the like button, because supposedly the like button supposedly helps the algorithm, which helps spread the video, which, you know, helps this channel. So go ahead, hit the like button as many times as you can. I'm just kidding. I think it just registers one click. So at least give one click, you know, that's the least you could do if you've watched 40 minutes of this live stream, I think. Anyways, good luck to everyone, and we'll see you in my next video. Take care. Bye.